attracting attention. We've already said that people are lazy. Your competition is fierce. People are super skeptical right now. So what you've got to do is make it so compelling that it's easier for a person to read your copy than it is for them to either throw it in the trash or skip over it in a magazine. So you do that with an arresting headline. And what you want to do is help people to understand how they can win an advantage or avoid a loss. Okay, so I'm just going to give you some headlines that are effective. And if I go too fast, tell me and we'll slow down. Okay. So here's a headline you could use, you know, this will give you an idea of one you could use for avoiding loss. A little mistake that cost an entrepreneur $50,000 a year. Should I repeat that? A little mistake that cost an entrepreneur $50,000 a year. So here's another one. This is for winning an advantage. This is a classic. How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. That's How to Win Friends and Influence People. When you write your headlines, you need to include specific information, exact dollar amounts, clarifying words like which of these, who else, or here's. Here's an example. Which of these 1495 CDs do you want for only $2 each? So in this example, I'm not asking you, do you want these CDs? I'm saying, which of these CDs? You obviously want this from me. So which of these CDs for $14.95, there's a specific dollar amount, do you want for only $2 each? Here's some more clarifying headlines. Who else wants younger looking skin in only 14 days? Five deadly myths that keep smokers hooked. Why some people achieve 100 to 1,000 times more success than others. I'll repeat these. Who else wants younger looking skin in only 14 days? Five deadly myths that keep smokers hooked. Why some people achieve 100 to 1,000 times more success than others. Sure. Why some people achieve 100 to 1,000 times more success than others. Another technique that you can use to get people's attention is to use folksy English to make your point. Get out of debt quick as a flash. So that's a catchy little phrase. So when you use these colorful expressions like thin as a rail, lightning speed, fit for a king, you know, they're corny, but they conjure up images for people, and they're vivid, and they'll make your message stand out. You can make your message newsworthy or to read like the headline of a news article, for example, former truck driver earns $8,000 a month as a real estate agent. Do you want me to repeat that? I guess that's a no. You can use snob appeal. What French designers have that American designers sometimes lack. You can use sex appeal if it's appropriate. New fragrance discovery makes you irresistible to women. Here's another one, avoiding criticism or shame. Do you make any of these 10 embarrassing mistakes in English? Curiosity. Can you pass this memory test? Or, how dog smart are you? This is one of my favorites. Okay.
Pat and Sandy Larson, she just gave you your headline. I don't know if you heard what she said a minute ago. how a truck driver made $8,000 a month selling real estate. You can modify that and sell that income opportunity program you've got. It's a real simple modification, and that's your headline.
If any of you want to talk to me after my speech about any of these headlines, please feel free to come up. Getting healthy. This is one of my favorites. Doctor's secret brain triggers, speed, self-healing, anywhere you command. I'll repeat that one. Doctor's secret brain triggers, speed, self-healing, anywhere you command. I'm sorry to...
It was pretty powerful.
Well, good. I'm glad somebody liked it. Doctor's secret brain triggers, speed, self-healing, anywhere you command. You know, what you also might want to do, at home, along with my swipe file, I have 3x5 index cards that just have headlines on them, so I have tons of these. Here's one. The power of positive thinking. Good one. The power of positive thinking. Oh, here's one. I stole this from Cosmopolitan magazine. The terrible danger of a perfect sex partner. The terrible danger of a perfect sex partner. You know, I don't know what that means, but so it sells their magazine. As a matter of fact, Cosmopolitan, the National Enquirer, that's a great source for headlines for you because they have to sell from a magazine rack, so they are screaming at you. My husband's an attorney. This says, using a lawyer may be dangerous to your wealth. I'll repeat this one. It's good. Using a lawyer may be dangerous to your wealth. Sometimes, you know, when you say the obvious and people go, oh, well, I know that. What's it all about? Speak Spanish like a diplomat. Here's a how-to. How to push your resume to the top of the stack. And I'll give you one more. How to wake up the financial genius inside you. Okay, so when you're writing headlines, let's say you get stuck. You can always start with how to. How to keep your kids under control. How to make your own luck. Or you can start with the truth about, the facts about, three powerful reasons, or now at last, and then you hook your benefit onto that. So step number one, attract attention. Your headline should motivate the largest number of people to say, I want that, or tell me more. Step number two, draw interest. All right, at this point, you've got your prospect's attention, so now you want to keep it by enlarging on that first emotional appeal that you made. So you're going to tell people how your product can help them gain love, acceptance, prestige, or avoid loss, pain, etc. And you want to lead your reader through the copy with the secondary benefits and greased shoot copy, which is short, punchy sentences that keep the reader sliding down the copy to the sale. I'm going to give you an example here. Okay, here's my headline. You don't have to write this down. Free seminar reveals how to make maximum money with your home computer. And here's my first block enlarging on this. Draw interest. I beg your pardon? The one before that. Okay. That's number one, my step number one, attract attention. Free seminar reveals how to make maximum money with your home computer. And now step number two, draw interest. I'm going to enlarge on that benefit. Did you know there are literally hundreds of ways to make money with your home computer? It's true. And the good news is, you don't have to be a computer genius to take advantage of these exciting opportunities. All you have to do is attend a free seminar to learn these little-known but proven ways of making a bundle with your home computer. Okay, so I've started it with a question. Did you know there are literally hundreds of ways to make money with your home computer? It's a grease chute. It's true. Zoom. And the good news is, so you're going to tell them the good news. And then I've used make a bundle with your home computer. So I'm using these English expressions or cliches that are vivid. Now, I told you I was going to tell you a little bit more about grease chute copy. One of the ways that you can get readers to keep reading is to use subheads. And so I'm going to give you some examples of subheads that will, number two, draw interest and keep interest. Okay, subhead number one, guaranteed to save you time. What about you?
Lisa, make sure everybody knows what a subhead is.
Subheads are like headlines, but they're in the body of the copy. So you might have a subhead that said, take advantage of our special rate, and then you're going to talk about your special rate. A full year's no-risk trial. Don't hate yourself for missing out. A full year's no-risk trial. Don't hate yourself for missing out. Start right away. And easy to use.
At least I'm going to tell them another reason to use subheads. When someone sends you a letter and you see a full page of text, uninterrupted, you think, golly, it's going to take me an hour to read this. It's like going to watching a TV show without commercials. Commercials kind of give you a break to take a pause and take a deep breath. Subheads say, well, all I got to do is read from this point to this point. If I don't like it, I can keep going. And what a subhead is basically three paragraphs and then a bold line and usually one size larger font and a little bit bolder. And it gives you a reason to read the next paragraph. And subheads help draw you through the chute that she's talking about. And if you read the letters that I write, or any of the letters, even the ones from David Joyce, you'll see, or Gary Howard, you'll see subheads, usually three per page. And sometimes you use a subhead as the last line on a page, and then you always have dot, 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 so that you say, well, I got to turn the page to see what he's talking about here. But subheads is a tool to get your reader past those full blocks of pages of stuff, because no one in here wants to think about reading War and Peace tonight. I mean, it's just too many pages. We don't have the time. But if all I have to do is read a synopsis of War and Peace and then another paragraph or another chapter title, it'll do well. I don't know if you've noticed this. The top-selling books nowadays, the chapters are 5 pages long or 6 pages long. In some books, they start out with chapters. These are fiction books. They start out with chapters 12 pages long, and by the time you get halfway through the book, the chapters are 3 pages, sometimes 2 pages, and some authors are using a half-page chapter. And what he does is he gets the reader involved, and then he starts compressing the chapter so it's the person thinks he's getting through the book quicker, because you go another chapter down, except for it's only half-page long, then you go another chapter down. It's the same way with subheads. The spacing between your subheads, you can make the person read the letter faster by having less and less between the subheads. But you don't want to put too many subheads per page, then they look like bullets. Go ahead.
Okay. So once you've attracted attention with the headline and you've drawn interest by talking to people about that main benefit and some of your other benefits, then in step three, you have to prove it. And people are very skeptical. They're very sophisticated. They get lots of direct mail. They see lots of ads. So today, I think you really need to talk to people, about why your product is believable and what's good about it and what backs up your claims and what backs up your benefits. People want and need a rational justification for buying, so you've got to give them those reasons. So you're going to use prove it copy throughout your message, and you need to be specific. Tell the who, what, when, where, and why of your claims. Talk about how your product's made. Talk about the credibility of your company. Offer people free samples so they can prove it to themselves. Show before and after photos if that's applicable. So what you really have to do is research to uncover all of the facts. You need to get your prospect to agree with you to say, yes, I think that's true. So what else you're saying must also be true. And as with all of your copy, you've got to be passionate, you've got to be enthusiastic, and you need to give all of the details. One of the things that a lot of people, neophyte copywriters, do is that they just talk about everything that's fantastic and they exaggerate. And maybe they're telling a little white lie here or there. Don't lie to people. Don't try to be perfect. It doesn't hurt to admit a minor fault. For example, there's a shampoo commercial that shows a woman who has beautiful hair. And she says, look, you know, my product is not going to give you beautiful hair overnight. But if you use it consistently, you'll see the results in 6 weeks. So they're admitting, my product isn't perfect, but they're telling you about a strong benefit. And I think people will believe that now more. Let me give you an example. This is from the idea that I talked to you about for the work-at-home computer free seminar. This is prove-it copy. Our government's Labor Department recently announced that over 85 million Americans successfully work at home with computers, doing all kinds of jobs. For example, Jay Lynch of Carson, California, makes over $5,000 a month with a computer bookkeeping service. Ann Wilson clears over $25,000 a month using his computer to predict lottery winners. B. Miller earns over $1,000 a month as an at-home secretary. And they're just everyday folks like you and me. The point is, if they can do it, you can too. So to recap, prove it to you. You must create, in steps 1 and 2, a strong desire to buy. And in step 3, prove it. You've got to give people a strong, logical reason to buy. So, step 4, create a desire to act now. As you reach the end of your sales pitch, you need a bold summary to tie up your emotional appeals and proof. Create a desire to act now is a clincher that recaps all the advantages and gives a nudge towards the sale. It's a summary that helps your prospects understand and want the advantages that you offer. So let me give you an example of this from the home computer pitch. This is create a desire to act now. If you need extra money right now, your home computer could be a gold mine. Believe it. What's more, you can easily put it to work for you and start bringing in bucks hand over fist. A few smart folks have already profited many times over from the same inside information you're invited to get for free. Won't you join them? So, in creating the desire to act now, your closing copy should be more urgent than your body copy. It needs to be high-pitched without sounding insincere. It's a personal appeal that asks prospects to look at their true need for the product and say, yeah, I want that. Number 5, ask for the order or ask for them to take some kind of action. When you ask for an order, that separates your advertising from image advertising that Madison Avenue agencies turn out. Because most advertising just says, here's my product, isn't it wonderful? And, you know, that's all they say to you. They don't ask you to act on it. But you can't be content to present your benefits and hope that someday people are going to buy your product. So your copy has to convince your prospect that now is the best time to buy. This is do something copy that asks for the order or offers to send more information. And this is another example from my home computer copy. This is ask for the order, step 5. To attend our free money-making seminar, just pick up the phone and dial 1-800 for cash. When the operator answers, tell her you want to attend our free seminar. Give her your full name, address, phone number, and what day you'll be attending. That's all there is to it. But remember, seating is limited and we're filling up fast. Don't put it off. Call right now. Before you know it, you'll be computing your way to big profits. Okay, now step five, asking for the order, is intricately linked to making an offer they can't resist. Your offer is the terms of your promotion, and it spells out what are the steps of your sale, and it's key to the success of your direct marketing. So the terms of your offer must press for an immediate sale. You've got to ask for the order now. Let me give you some examples of offers. Half price, limited time, free gift, limited quantity, free trial offer, till forbid. And what that means is it's like Book of the Month Club, that they'll keep sending you that book or record or cassette series until you say stop. Till forbid is what they call that. Till, until forbid. Get a friend. So that means, you know, you're already a member. If you pull in somebody else, I'm going to give you this free record. You can offer a discount, sweepstakes are very popular, prices going up, and low introductory price. Now, there are many, many different ways to structure your offer. For example, that first example I gave you, half price, you could say two for one. And you're not going to know which offer is going to work better until you actually mail both offers, and you find out. Do people like half price or do they like two for one? So that's why it's so important to think about it, to structure it, to try it, and to refine all of your efforts. So you want to make it easy to order and spell out your terms step by step. And that needs to include a strong guarantee. So the easier and more worthwhile your offer, the more sales you're going to get. When you get through writing, you need to go back through your copy. Everything you've written, and you're going to use this question to yourself. So what? And what that means is read each sentence and ask yourself, so what? If it doesn't promise a benefit, if it doesn't prove a point, if it doesn't have impact, if it's not clear, get rid of the sentence. Okay, yes. The formula, so what? Read each sentence and ask yourself, so what? If it doesn't promise a benefit, if it doesn't prove a point, if it doesn't have impact, and if it's not clear, edit it out.
What Lisa means there is that every single word, every single line, every inch of space in your letter is valuable. Every single word should be there for a purpose. The purpose should be to solicit a sale. It doesn't have to say, I want you to spend money with me. But every word from the dear all the way to the sincerely on the last page to, through the PS should be there for a purpose. Not to fill space, not to tell about your life story, not to talk about anything else except for to give the reader plenty of confidence in your product. You know, one thing we do is we write an offer and then go back and remove all the roadblocks. We write an offer the way we think it looks, and then we go back and we eliminate everything that has no business at all being in there. And then we look at every single word and say, is this the right word to use here? Is this the best word here? Because when you get into percentages, you know, you talk about 1% response rate or 2% response rate. If you change one word, You can literally double your response rate. We recently did a mail out of 10,000 where I got 35 people called and told me the same thing. That there was a discrepancy between numbers that we had on the first page and numbers we had on the fourth page. And that because of that, they were reluctant to order. And the only discrepancy was that when we proofread it, they were close, but they weren't exact. So when you look at some of these offers that we're going to look at tomorrow and some of the offers that are in your package, look at it with the eye of why was this word in here? Why is this sentence in here? Why is this, what is he, you know, don't look at it like, oh, this is great, it gets me excited, I want to spin it. Try to look at it from an analytical point of view. Why did he do it this way? Why did he use this font size? Why did he structure it this way? And there's a reason for most of that in a good offer. Oh, I wanted to say something else. You know, on the previous thing that you had up there, you talked about making people want to buy now. The first product I had, one of the first products was a pirate videotape, and it was about, it documented the use of little black boxes to descramble signals coming down from satellite. And at that time, it was legal to have those boxes, and it was legal to document them. But the federal government, there was pending legislation to make that illegal, to even make the tape that I was selling illegal. So obviously, I included that in the letter, said warning. This offer will only be available as long as it is legal. Pending legislation will make this tape and others like it illegal shortly. If you wish this tape, you must order now for us to guarantee delivery. And people would call us and say, is it still legal yet? Can I order today? And what it did is it added a tremendous impetus to them to order right away because it could have become illegal. And it did become illegal, and we had to restructure the way that we did it on the advice of an attorney, and the FCC held up our tape in Congress one day and said, these guys are out of control, you know, this is what's wrong with this country, outlaws like this. And of course, we use the FCC statements in our future direct mail letters. It was good for us, and it was good for selling stuff. But you have to take advantage to us, you know, to a lot of people that you could have said, oh, I can't sell this, it's going to be illegal, this thing is going to get me in trouble, and people would have walked away from it. What we did is we used that as a selling tool. To say exactly, I mean, that was the absolute truth, that it was legal at that time, and all it was a videotape that documented different devices that was being used out there. So you have to use those things.
I want to talk to you about the rewards, the opportunities that are available in direct response, because it really is a venture that's worth the risk. So I'd like to tell you a four-letter word that can take the risk out of getting rich. Does anybody know what that four-letter word is? Test your headlines, test your prices, test your mailing lists, test your offers, and test your copy. If at first you don't succeed, keep after it. Keep after it. You have to be willing to make mistakes. And you need to learn from your mistakes. You need to persist. It's worth it. And finally, you can reap the rewards of a flexible lifestyle because it's an alternative for people who don't want to get in their car, in their tie, or their nylons and get into the rat race and conform and say yes and earn their X amount of dollars because you have a great deal of flexibility. There is a great deal of money to be made. You have the flexibility, the lifestyle flexibility. You have choices. You can wear your jeans and your tennis shoes. You can take your kid to the park when you want. So the opportunities are out there. Study, learn, apply what you've learned, and keep after it. Thank you very much.
Tomorrow, Lisa's going to be more involved in the copyright process, and a lot of things she talked about here, we're going to show samples of tomorrow as you actually, everyone in here is going to get involved in copywriting an offer for a product. But keep in mind that Wednesday and Thursday, when we come up with a product out of thin air, that Lisa is someone you can contact. If you come up with the ultimate product for the ultimate market, but that product doesn't exist, that's okay, because people like this can create those products for you. Okay, now we're going to have just a couple of questions here.
I'm sorry.
Lisa, my question goes back to when you were talking about listing your features and then turn them into a benefit.
Right.
And you said rank them. When you're writing copy, when you write copy for a newspaper, you use an inverted pyramid where you put the most important first and then taper down because you'll lose the readers in there. When you're writing long copy to sell something,
mm-hmm.
do you use that same thing? Do you list your strongest benefits first
yes.
and let it taper off rather
yes.
than building up to the sale at the end?
Well, now, you have to prioritize your benefits, yes. But the end of your sales pitch has to be very strong, and it has to, you really have to repeat your sales message all the way through. So, you know, you list your strongest benefit, your next strongest, you know, and then you do your prove it copy. Then you tie it together with a summary at the end that is absolutely compelling and that really is driven and that covers all of the objections and talks about all of the benefits and all of the great things that you're going to get. And also says what you're going to lose if you don't do it now. Does that answer your question?
There's another thing that she is saying, but because she does it so often, is that when you write benefits, don't write benefits about your product. You're writing this offer for the customer. List what the customer wants first. You've done the demographic study. You know these people in your mind. What is it that they want in life? And list what they want. Now, there's your benefits. And your product should be able to, you ought to be able to cross features to your products to those benefits. But don't just say, oh, this is a nice wash machine because it's white, and I'll put this in here, a nice white wash machine. You've got to say, oh, these people have color-coordinated homes. And what I want to do is that to them it's really important that whatever furniture they're buying matches their home. And that you put that as the benefit. You don't try to match your machine and just tell all the great things about your machine. You try to list what people want. List all the things they want, and then cross that match to the features of your product. Two more questions.
Lisa, you mentioned the standard rate and data books, and I just thought everyone would be interested in something that happened to me with regard to those books. Standard rate and data are books that show like newspaper rates and mailing lists from any possible list you can imagine. You get them at your library if you want to use them. They're if you want to buy the whole set, it's around $1,100. I went to the library one day, and when I was coming out of it, you know how they have trays with books on it that are for sale, used books, that type of thing? I saw the standard rate and data books, which come out quarterly, that they were throwing out from the previous quarter. So I went up to the librarian, and I said, how much are these? I was trying to figure out how many I'd want to buy for myself. And she said, well, they're 50 a piece. So I was like, geez, will you take a check? She said, for $3.50. I was like, wow. So you might want to become really friendly with your librarian because it's an incredible source of information.
That's a very good point. We'll have SRDS book up here this week. One more question.
One of my questions, too, actually. Now, you said that you have to do the demographic test. How do you do that yourself? Can you do that yourself? If I give you a literature like this, and I say, well, this is what I got, would you... No.
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question. What
you're going to learn, he's asking you, can you give him the demographics? This is what he wants to sell, and can you give him the demographics of people who want to buy? That's absolutely backwards. That's absolutely backwards, and by the time you leave here Thursday, you won't approach it this way. You won't say, here's a product, who's going to buy it? What you're going to say is, here's a market, what do these people want? And that's going to be the difference in success in direct mail. You know, something I said this morning is that you're going to have to make a decision here, whether you want to sell what you've already got, and it's possible that you may be able to sell that, or whether you want to make money in direct mail. And making money in direct mail involves, first, before you come up with a product, identifying a group of people who have the ability to buy, who have proven that they buy through direct mail, and that you can reach through direct mail. And our next speaker is going to talk about how to find out those things. But unless you identify those three things first, you're going to be like the companies that try to sell roll-on deodorant. It may take you 20 years to convince people to buy your product. But if you can identify the market first, find out what they want, then all you have to do is give it to them. And then if you're lazy, like Karen and I, or I am, Karen's not as lazy as I am, then that's what you want to do. You don't want to waste your time trying to sell things that are hard to sell to people who really don't want to buy stuff. What you want to do is to just do the good stuff. There was a World War II pilot, actually a Korean pilot, his name is Glenn Cunningham. He holds the record for the number of MiGs shot down during the Korean War. He shot down 27. And they asked him, how come you did so good? I mean, how was it that you shot down 27, the nearest guy shot down 11? He said it was simple. He said, I'd fly at the back of the pack and watch the weak ones, watch for the bad pilots and shoot them down. He said, why go after their aces? He said, I just looked for the pilots of the opposite of the Koreans that were flying slow, the ones that weren't staying up, the ones that had engine problems, and those are the ones I shot down. He said, I'm no war hero. I just took out the easy ones. And that's what you want to do. You just want to go after the easy targets. I mean, if you guys want to go after, be heroes and go after the hard stuff, that's okay. But my philosophy is go after the easy ones first. And once you've taken care of every possible way to make money easily with direct mail, then you go after the hard stuff if you want to. Okay, let's give Lisa a hand. Now what we're going to do is we're going to take a 7-minute break. Tell you two things before we get started. First of all, there are a lot of books over here that Carl Galletti brought, and Carl was scheduled to speak now, but he's going to speak tomorrow morning, and he's got a catalog of lots of books. If you're interested in those books, talk to him, because they do belong to him. The other thing is that I will probably be speaking a lot tomorrow, so don't worry if you don't think I'm saying enough today.
It concerns me.
No, you'll get plenty of me tomorrow for 2 or 3 hours, and tomorrow is more of a hands-on. Every one of you will be involved in what we're doing tomorrow. Today is kind of just to lay a good foundation so you know that when we get ready to write an offer tomorrow and we talk about different points and different techniques, you'll know. And the next speaker here is Karen Anderson. And she's going to talk about a number of things, including using lists and how to acquire lists and probably endorse mailings and things like that. And those are things you need to learn about. Most of you know what lists are, but you're going to find a lot more about lists. And a few moments ago, I mentioned the fact that you need to find a group of people who are spending money and who have proven that they're spending money through direct mail and find out what they're buying. Here's the lady who's going to show you how to do that. With that, here's Karen.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you. I'm really glad to be here today. I'm going to try to make this as interesting as possible. Sometimes when you look at lists and list services, you think it's pretty boring. You've just got a lot of information, a lot of data, and you're looking at numbers. But it's an essential element to doing a successful direct mail campaign. So I'd like to explain to you how to do it, how to get the information that you want about the list that you want, and to increase the probability that you're going to have a successful direct mail campaign. I'd like to preface this by saying that unlike most of the speakers before me, I think I've gone to the direct mail school of hard knocks. I have learned the hard way about what things work, what things don't work, what things are just little mistakes that get made in putting together a direct mail piece that can make a significant difference on whether it works or not. I'd like to give you an illustration of that because some of the real simple things can be the kiss of death to a direct mail campaign. One of the things that I also want to talk about are endorsements and the power of endorsements. An endorsement is a person that has a relationship with a buyer already, and that person says, take a look at this offer. That's the essence of an endorsement. If a person already has a relationship with a buyer, you don't have to spend your time developing that relationship. It's already built in, which is a very, very profound, important element in direct mail. One of the things, and I'll try and give you some illustrations and examples of things as I go along. I've worked primarily in the financial newsletter industry. I've worked with as a consultant for Gary North, and I've worked in business with Bruce Tipperary, who was Gary North's CEO, and I have my own business, and there are a lot of things that are standard within the industry but are real important to know. And I
I'm one of those people that I love it when the mailman comes at the day. I get like all excited and I was like, oh, the mailman's here. And I go out to my box and I get real excited about mail. And it's a little embarrassing, but I love junk mail. I'm the kind of person that reads it when it says, dear occupant. And I think, ooh, you know, I'll look at this. I would say that I'm probably in the small minority of people that read that kind of thing. But one of the things that I learned early on was if you're getting it in the mail and if you see it in the mail again, chances are is that there's a reason that you're getting it, and that is that it worked and it paid off somewhere down the line. So I've been married for 17 years. I have two kids, and I have gotten in the mail this little thing, that an envelope with a heart on it that it says, you know, for singles, check this out. And I think, where did they get my name? Well, obviously, it was a compiled list. They got my name from the phone book. They got my name from Bon Appetit magazine. They got my name from somewhere. But they were targeting that, but it was a compiled list. I have not responded, that I know of, to a singles ad before. So they didn't get my name on a list that was responsive. And that's I'm giving you a lot of information, and it's all kind of blending in. So if I sound like I'm confusing you, stop me, ask questions, and do whatever, because there's so much information to give that it's...
Tell them what a compiled list is.
That's what I was getting ready to. A compiled list is where they just pull together names from whatever source. These people have had no history of purchasing or buying before. They've just gotten their name from somewhere. One of the first times, I'll tell you, responsive list. A responsive list is somebody who has a history of buying something already. My name is Karen Anderson. My aunt one time sent me a subscription to Gourmet magazine. On the label, it didn't say Karen, it said Kaven, K-A-V-E-N, because someone who was entering it mistook the R for a V. Well, I never really thought about my name being on mailing lists until I started getting tons of mail for Kaven Anderson. And then every time it came in the mail, I went, oh, they bought that list. They used that list. And until there was that mistake, I had no idea where they were getting my name from, because everything just had my name on it. A trick of the trade when you're ordering things, I use a variety of middle initials when I order things now. I ordered, I'm trying to think what I ordered. I ordered Health and Healing, which is a health newsletter that Phillips Publishing promotes, and I ordered it from Karen H. Anderson. So now, every time I get something for Karen H. Anderson, I know that they were renting the Health and Healing list. I get Finance Over 50, and I look great, but I get Finance Over 50, and I'm not quite there yet. The gray hair, though, I think it came from my kids. I get Finance Over 50, so I'm listed as Karen F. Anderson. So when I get things in the mail, I know that they've rented the Finance Over 50 list. And it's just an interesting way to figure out who's mailing what and what kinds of things are working. This is an example of an endorsement. This is not my favorite example, but it's just one I happen to... I saved my junk mail. Like, where's the junk mail? This is a package here to acquire new subscribers. It's a new acquisition package. Chip Woods did this. It's for a health newsletter called Second Opinion. And this is what he's mailing, front, back. It's signed by William Campbell Douglas, who's the physician that writes Second Opinion. But when you open it up, you get a little slip of paper, and it's from Wallace W. Wood, also known as Chip Wood. And down here, he says, friend, you must read the enclosed letter from Dr. William Campbell Douglas. Forgive the urgent tone, but it really is that important. When Dr. Douglas told me how the truth about AIDS was being suppressed, I was shocked. I couldn't believe anyone in the medical profession would hide the truth about such a deadly danger, et cetera, et cetera. Sincerely, Chip Wood. This is an endorsement. Now, hopefully, the people on this list have seen Chip's name a number of times, and so when they get it, they go, oh, I'm getting a letter from Wallace W. Wood from Chip. And so they go, I guess I'll go ahead and read this letter. So what you want them to do is, whether it's an offer, whether it's a new acquisition, whatever it is, you want them to read it. One of the things that's real hard about direct mail is that you don't really know what you can honestly do to get your mail open. So there are a lot of strategies and techniques to get people to open the mail. Let me just give you a couple. See, I'm driving myself crazy. I've just got so much to say. So I'll just ramble, and if it doesn't make any sense at the end, they won't pay me, I guess. Oh, I'm sorry. They're not paying me. Yet.
You do real bad, we'll make the tape available free.
Oh, thank you so much. This is this is the latest J. Abraham package. Is everybody familiar with who J. Abraham is? That's a given? Yes? Okay. Jay's a marketer. This is a package that came in the mail the other day. It came in this kind of envelope. You know how much postage is on this? There's a 29-cent stamp and two 23-cent stamps. It's in a carrier this size. The return address is Gary and Sharon North, but it says Long Beach, California on here. Gary North lives in Texas. Jay nailed this. It came out of Long Beach. This is his package. If you look on the label here, the label says to Mr. Stephen C. Anderson, who happens to be my husband, only, has his name and address, critically important, first class. This came in the mail. Do you think it got opened right away at my house? Yeah, it did, because it, now here's another. I did. Absolutely. That's not fair. See, I really love junk mail. So Steve and I, when we were early on in our marriage, I made this deal that I said, okay, if it comes to Mr. Anderson, you open it. If it comes to Ms., Mrs., anything like that, Karen Anderson, I open it. And if it comes to Mr. and Mrs. Anderson, I open it. So I kind of snitched on this one. Here's another example of a carrier that came to Stephen C. Anderson, and it has teaser copy. Everything on the outside is called teaser copy. And all they want you to do is to get you to open this package. It says, secrets have now been revealed that you can use to increase your lifespan and dramatically improve your health. It's got a picture of the Capitol on it. Never before has health information of this magnitude been made available to the public. This is David Williams' alternative control. A control is a piece of mail that they mail over and over and over again because it's been proven that it works. And so it's called the control. So if you test something against it, then you're going to see how the test goes against your control. That's going to be it's like a benchmark or a baseline in computer language. So which do you think is more likely to get open? This or this? The big one? Okay. Let me tell you what it had inside just for fun. This is an endorsement letter from Gary North. It's on his letterhead. It has a secondary endorsement, which is pretty interesting. On the bottom, from Sharon North, was Gary's wife. There is another letter which bases the ad from Bruce Tippery saying, Jay's wonderful. And then there is a sort of a self-endorsement on Jay. It's a newspaper variety of articles. So this is a promotion that Jay's doing. I never saw a price in it. It looks like it's he wants a percentage of profit. I don't see an upfront price for this, so which means it's expensive.
Does everybody know who Gary North is?
How many people subscribe to Remnant Review? Any of Gary North's products? Yes, sir? Gary North is an economist. He writes a newsletter. I'm sorry, it's hot of you. Writes a newsletter, and his mailing list has actives about 10,000 people, actives and recent expires, which are within 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, his headline on the letter he sends out, it says, are you prepared for the coming economic firestorms ready to sweep this country? The next civil disruptions will make the Civil War look like a cakewalk, is what they say, or a Sunday school party, something like that. Yeah. It's real, real, real super ultra paranoid people. Uh-huh. Very conservative people who are scared to death. It also has to do with the new money and the fact the government's taking your rights away. And I mean, that is the pitch that they send. That may not be the newsletter itself, but that's what he sends out. And that's the type of people he
gets. So let me talk to you about lists. And because I know Gary's list well, I'll use it as an illustration. Gary's list has 10,000 active subscribers on it. These are people that pay, I don't even know what it is, $129, $100, thereabouts, to buy information from Gary. They get called information product buyers. That's what they're buying. They're not buying a tangible product they can use. They're buying information. And they subscribe to Gary for a year. If someone does not renew their subscription, then they're an expire. They're a recent expire. You can go back X number of years. You can get expires out a year, out 2 years, out 3 years. The farther back they go, the less, quote, good the name is. Let me explain what it means on the front where it says a rose by any other name will smell as sweet. When you're with people that do direct mail and love direct mail, and they find out things like someone just says casually, well, in my computer, I've got about 30,000 names that I've never done anything with. And you go, really? And you get real excited about it. Because the principle is that those names are valuable because a previous buyer, someone who's bought previously, is going to be more likely to buy from you because they've already established trust and a relationship with you. Those are the kinds of people that you want to find, people that are established buyers. And your own list is going to be your best list. Why doesn't Bill Myers rent out his list? Because those names are really valuable to him. And I'll try and just weave into this some tricks of the trade. If something works when you mail it, do you quit mailing it? No, you mail it again. Do you mail it again to the same group? Yes, you can, absolutely. Because sometimes it needs to be in front of someone once, twice, three times before that person will buy. Just because they don't respond the first time doesn't mean that it's not any good. One of the things, though, you have to be careful of, and I'd love to have some time with the printer up here, too, because, again, I've learned lessons the hard way. We did a package for Gary that was promoting, Gary North, that was promoting a seminar, and it was a good package, and it worked, so we decided we would send it out again. So we took the package, and I think we were mailing 20,000 pieces, which in some terms are real small numbers. We're mailing 20,000 pieces, and so what we did is we took a little piece of paper like the yellow one that I showed you a few minutes ago, and we wrote a little note from Gary that said, See, that's accurate. we wrote a little note from Gary that said, you may have seen this before, but for whatever reason you didn't respond to it. There's another opportunity. Please respond to this now because this may be your last chance. So we took it like the good little direct marketers that we were, and we just added it to the package, and off we went with our 20,000 pieces, going, well, that was easy. Until the dear friend of mine who runs our letter shop calls and said, did you guys weigh this by any chance? And I went, no, you know, we just kind of assumed that it would be fine. Well, guess what happens if you're mailing first class and it goes over an ounce? The post office is not real considerate about charging you, a tenth of 29 cents in order to make your mail package work. They charge you the full 29 cents. But what happens when you've got 20,000 pieces that need an extra 29 cents? It starts adding up, and if you're mailing 50,000 pieces or 100,000 pieces, those mistakes can be pretty costly. Well, fortunately, because our letter shop guy caught it, we weighed it, and we ended up pulling it and having to redo it, which was a whole lot better for us to redo the piece, remail it, than it was to add another 29 cents on. So we learned those lessons sort of the hard way. I weigh everything now.
That's a key point. What you're saying, printing is a lot less. It costs you a lot less to print an 8-page letter with an envelope, with an order form, and slide it inside of another envelope than it costs you to mail it. Right now, postage is about double the cost of printing. So if you have to reprint something, a lot of times it's cheaper to reprint it than to pay another ounce for postage. And if you're going to put a tenth of an ounce over, and you're going to ship an envelope that weighs 1.1 ounces, why don't you spend some time and just ship it that's got 2 full ounces? If you're paying the postage for 2 full ounces, why don't you just ship 2 full ounces? We have a question here.
Go ahead.
Hi, Karen. Brian Redfield. On your second mailing to the same list, how long did you wait before you mailed that second letter?
It was probably about 6 weeks.
6 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
And it pulled as well as it did the first time.
I'm going to let you talk without questions for a few minutes.
Okay. Now, let me tell you what I'm supposed to be talking about here. ordering list. What I'd like you to do, if you would, is to turn in the blue folder to the... Well, the first page is... You know, I get this kind of stuff when I go to seminars and I file it and there's so much stuff to look at and read, I don't read it. This is one that I really would recommend that you go back and read. It's how to find a list broker. And a list broker is someone that's really valuable because if they know lists, they can really save you a lot of money. You can mail a package. A lot of times minimum orders are 5,000 pieces. You can mail a package, and if it doesn't work, the list broker isn't out the money. You're out the money. So you want to have somebody who's very competent, who knows lists, that you can trust to recommend lists to you if you're going to be mailing this, because when you start adding up 5,000, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 pieces, it adds up real fast. The other thing, and if I don't remember to do...